John Leyendecker. I've had the pleasure of hearing him speak at a couple of Focus conferences in the past, and I've really enjoyed his talks. Just a little bit about John. So, John, having encountered Jesus in the Eucharist, John became Catholic in 1999 after a very prodigal life. Witnessing a family tragedy at 12 years old led him to a life of vice and confusion. It is from this place of brokenness that John shares what Christ has done in his life. He studied classics and theology at Xavier University and has done graduate work at the Athenaeum of Ohio. Working as a full-time youth minister for 4 years, several years as a team director for Focus, and training people across the country in evangelization and discipleship has equipped John and made him even more passionate for the work of the new evangelization. John joined the School of Faith team July 2014, and currently he and his wife Lisa reside in the Cincinnati area with their 9 children. Yeah, that's a lot of children. I just gotta ask, is it actually cheaper by the dozen, or do you not know because you're not quite there yet? Well, anyway,
check. Everybody hear me okay? Is that coming through? All right. It's funny, that guy looks like one of my sons, so I'm like, that's like my son in a couple years. Who doesn't look like that? Where to start? I really, first of all, thank you for being here. I love doing this. I mean, I love getting up and speaking in front of people, but I love coming to places like this, you know, balmy, warm Fargo, North Dakota in January, which is awesome. And I get an excuse to wear my hat that people frown upon in Cincinnati, but here it's like normal, right? I get asked often, can you throw that picture up? So there are my children. The nun isn't mine. But she's awesome. She was there when I came into the church as a young man in college, just like yourselves here. But there are my kids. My oldest there on the left is Maximilian Augustine. My daughter here on the left is Anastasia Claire. A little story about Anastasia. You know, Anastasia in Greek means resurrection. Because I knew when I had a blonde hair, blue eyed daughter, that she'd be the death of me. So, wanted a little hope there. And then next to her is Solanus Joseph. And then, which one did we have next? Cecilia Agnes. It's kind of next to the big guy there. Then we had Lucy Margaret down in the corner, Lucy Goose. Then we have Trofina Catherine in the middle. I call her Tsarina. She looks like one of those little Russian dolls, you know, Tsarina. So she's Trofina the Tsarina. And then down there is Clement Pio, so big Clem. And then Max is holding John Cashin. We call him Cashin or Cash Money, all kinds of stuff. He's a terror. And then the nun, Sister Elizabeth, is holding Silas Mark. So I don't know if you guys can tell or not, we're Catholic. And people ask me often, you know, like, do you know what causes that? And I'm like, no. Tell me. And then they don't know what to say. But you know, what causes that? I'm like, I don't know, man. We stopped drinking out of the same cup. I don't know what, it's just keeps happening, you know. One time in a grocery store, this poor woman, you know, she thought she was funny. Do you know what causes that? And I was like, don't worry, we bought a TV. We're not bored anymore. We're gonna watch TV from now on. So like that's theology of the body, right? Christ gave a command before he left. He said, go and make disciples. I picked the most fun way to make this. So I have a particularly attractive redheaded wife who is a saint to deal with myself and all of our children. If you can flash her up there. That's my wife, Lisa, and she is extraordinarily happy there. I have found that the way to a woman's heart is barbecue. But that's my wife, Lisa, so men, stop the lust in your hearts. But she's amazing, and we live a pretty chaotic lifestyle, as you can imagine, with 9 kids. Anybody here, like, one of 5 or 6 or 7, or eight, like, everyone is? Okay, that's good. Anybody here an only child? Okay. Hey, go here. Bad news, this is your destiny. God's making up for things, right? So. But I never thought in any way that I would be the father of 9 children one day. Heck, I didn't even think I'd be Catholic, right? That wasn't what I planned. And most of you are in college, right? Some of you might have just snuck in, I don't know, but you're in college and you're planning and you're thinking about the future and you're doing all this stuff. What's the future got in store, right? And so I just want to share a little bit with you tonight about how I came to get involved in this mess, right? Because it is a mess, but it's a beautiful mess, right? You ever seen those pictures of, like, you know, the Hubble telescope where it's like, it's so beautiful, but really it's like chaotic matter or whatever they say. I know some of you physics weirdos are going to correct me for what I'm saying here, but I apologize in advance. But it's like chaotic and it's like a black hole and all this crazy stuff's going on. But it's absolutely stunning. And that's my life now. And I had no idea that it could be that way, right? No idea. I was sitting here tonight, I was waiting for my ride. Thank you again for the ride over here. But I was waiting for my ride, and it reminded me when I was a young man, I used to sit by our Christmas tree. And one Christmas, I remember, my dad was an alcoholic, right? He didn't beat me, but he wasn't a great dad. He wasn't present, okay? He just wasn't present. He had a lot going on. But he was the type of dad, he taught me how to throw a baseball and a football and encouraged me and all that. But he wasn't present. But I remember one time, I think I was around maybe first or second grade, somewhere in there, and I was sitting by our Christmas tree. And outside, we had a street light just by our house. And you know those times when those big, fat snowflakes fall down in the street light? You know what I'm talking about? That kind of, it's just beautiful. It's still to this day, it gives me pause. And I was sitting out there today in the parking lot before I came here, and I was thinking about that moment. That moment when I was a young man, and it was the first time in my life, because even at first, second grade, right around in there, I felt like a square peg in a round hole world. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, all of my life growing up, even at a young age, I just felt like I didn't fit. And I had this, like, maybe a hole in my heart, let's say, that was like as big as a needle, but an ocean of pleasure would never fill it. And I tried to put a lot of stuff in there. And I tried to be a lot of different things as I grew up. But I remember this moment, particularly as a young man, it was intense. I was sitting there, it's the Christmas tree, you know. My mom is insane when it comes to a Christmas tree, right? Like, my mom was like the lady that, like, just too much tinsel on the tree. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it's like glitter. It's everywhere, and you find it, you know, years later still around the house, right? And it looked horrendous during the daytime. But the thing was nuclear at night, right? Like, it just shimmered and shone. And so imagine with me, I'm in my living room. I grew up kind of, I don't know, kind of poor, you know, kind of upper poor class, I guess. We weren't dirt poor, but we didn't do that well. And I'm sitting there by this beautiful, stunning tree, and I'm looking at these huge snowflakes fall, and I remember for the first time in my life experiencing peace. You know what I'm talking about? When everything really is okay. And that's crazy for me. You know, even at a young age, I felt that. I experienced that. I was, it changed me. And I wanted that feeling. I wanted to feel that way normally. But like I said, my dad was an alcoholic. My parents, you know, smoked weed and drank and did all this stuff. My dad was a machinist, worked hard, never missed a day of work. But it was just, it's a rough childhood, you know what I mean? And I remember experiencing that peace, and it's, you know, as with most things, it's kind of fleeting and it's soon lost. And then what happens? Well, we had Christmas, and that day I'm outside, I'm playing with my neighbor Derek next door, and he's like a year older than me. And that SOB said that there was no Santa. Talk about destroying peace. And I remember coming in, man. I came in and my mom's like doing laundry, and you know, I'm an old guy, okay? I'm sorry I'm old, but you know, I'm trying to relate. I try to pick up my kids' hip words now, you know, like I ask my daughter after school now, what's the tea, right? You guys say that? Is that a thing here, or is it, it hasn't hit, or it's old here? She informed me 2 days ago when I picked her up from school that they no longer say that. So I'm trying to stay current, right? But I sit down, I'm old, and you know, but back then I sit down, the laundry room's off my parents' room, and I sit down on my mom's waterbed, you know? You guys probably aren't old enough to remember waterbeds, but they were wild. I think they're gonna make a comeback. Invest in waterbeds. They're like the new Bitcoin. They're gonna make a comeback. But I sat out on this thing, you know, I'm sitting there and I said, Mom, Derek said there's no Santa. And my mom like stops. Right? It's like the dread of every parent. Well, John, Santa is just the spirit of Christmas. What? Spirit of Christmas? Liar? You've been lying to me, right? What the heck? And she reaches up and finds a toy that she forgot to wrap, right? It got like stuck on the shelf in the laundry room. And she pulls out a toy. She's like, yeah, it's Spirit Christmas. And here's one of the toys we forgot. I guess she was trying to make it better. Like, you know, you just crushed my world, but here's a toy. Enjoy the waterbed, you know? But so I'm like, I look at it and I'm thinking, I said, well, if Santa's the spirit of Christmas, is God just the spirit of being nice? My mom was not ready for such philosophical questions from her only child who's in like first or second grade. And she didn't know what to say, and she just said, well, go enjoy your new children, right? And life went on. And then one day, you know, I don't know if you guys can tell, I like to be funny or whatever. I'm a little bit of a smart aleck, right? Those kinds of things. And I'm chubby, right? So middle school starts to get a little tough, right? You get made fun of. And remember, I'm a square peg in a round hole world. And I'm trying to fit in. And I'm trying to do all this stuff like we do, trying to be cool. And all of a sudden in sixth grade, I realize, you know, I'm not just chubby. I'm actually pretty good at football. And I'm so good, in fact, that in sixth grade, they asked me if I want to practice with the high school team, freshman and JV. Not fat anymore. I'm a football player. Right? Turns out you ladies like football players. Changes fat guys into different, you know, cute fat guys, right? And so I start playing football and I feel like my life's starting to go a little right. It's going better, but I got a smart mouth. I'm starting to get in trouble in school. And, you know, I lived in Independence, Kentucky. Does that sound like the hood? Because it's not. But I was listening to Snoop Dogg and thought I was in the hood. Started, you know, acting in such a way, and, you know, I think I'm a gangster or whatever, so I'm, you know, we're getting in fights, we're doing all this stupid stuff. It's like West Side Story in Independence, Kentucky. It's like the sharks and the whatever, you know, like, but it's like the hoods who are like the heavy metal guys, right? And I'm like the rap guy, and we've got this little war going on at school, and it's crazy, and things go down, I end up getting suspended from school, and I'm facing expulsion. Right? It's crazy. Do I look like the kind of guy to get expelled from school? Turns out I am. And I'm not joking, the next morning, my mom wakes me up. And I don't know, you guys look, especially some of you ladies, you look really just like you wouldn't get suspended from school. Okay? I'm gonna be honest. But if you're anything like me, you have been suspended. The only benefit of being suspended, because you're going to get zeros for the day and all that stuff, is you get to not go to school and sleep in. Okay? The scales, right? For me, zeros all day, sleeping in. Okay? Even at that point in my life. So what happens is my mom wakes me up, and my dad had lost his job a couple months before as a machinist, right? As things are wont to do. If any of your parents work in the trades, you know, work can be spotty or whatever. And he lost his job. And she said, hey, your dad's having some chest pains. We're going to run him up to the hospital while we still have the insurance, right? Again, this is a problem for people that are a little bit poor, right? And so they're running up. And the next thing I know, I hear my mom scream my dad's name. Fred. Fred. That's my dad's name, not mine. You can laugh. It's cool. And I run out of my room. And I look down, and my dad is in massive convulsions. He's having a heart attack, and he's dying right in front of me. And what I didn't tell you guys was, you might have guessed from the philosophical question I had, I wasn't raised Catholic. I wasn't raised Christian. I was invited, I went to vacation Bible school because my neighbor had a pool. You know what I mean? Like, if you went to vacation Bible school, you could swim in the pool and he bought pizza, right? Jesus, pizza, fair trade, right? Which is pretty cool, because at that vacation Bible school, I learned to braid candles. I think they were teaching us about the Trinity, but now I can braid my daughter's hair really well because of that. It's funny, things you pick up, you never know when you're going to use this stuff, right? So that's my only exposure to God, right, by that point. My parents told me not to lie, to be a good person, stuff like that. My mom was way fallen away Catholic. My dad's mom was half Catholic, half Greek Orthodox. My dad's dad was Protestant and not practicing. Nobody was practicing in our families, right? That's all I knew. And so I'm faced with this dilemma. My dad's died. And so I begin to do what most of us would do, right? What do? You start making deals with God. And I started asking God, if you don't let my dad die, I'll stop cussing. If you don't let my dad die, I'll stop messing with girls. If you don't let my dad die, I'll stop getting suspended from school. All this stuff, right? And you all know about that, right? You know about making deals with. We all do. You're in college. You do it every time you take a test, right? All right, Jesus, I will. No, but. And so what happened was they took my dad to the hospital, and the volunteer firefighter guy was supposed to take me in his truck behind. I was supposed to go to the hospital with him. But he was a friend of my dad's, so he was super concerned, and he forgot me. And so here I am. I'm 12 years old. It's a month after Christmas. It's a month before my birthday, turning 13 for a young man. And I'm alone. And I remember punching the door frame, just angry, crying. Saying, God, don't take my dad. Don't take my dad. And so eventually my grandma picks me up about 45 minutes later, and we go to the hospital. And if you've ever been in this situation, I'm very sorry, but they take you into a little room, and the doctor comes in and he goes, Mrs. Leyendecker, I regret to inform you, but we did everything we could, and your husband passed away at 8:27 this morning. World changed. Absolutely changed. He then asked my mom, would you like to see your husband? And so we walk back in the emergency room, right? And I walk back, and my mom, we walk in the room, and my mom walks over to the bed immediately, and I can't, right? I mean, as you can imagine, I can't get there. And my mom's tucking my dad in. He's just got a white sheet over him. She goes, Fred, you look so cold. And I knew, man, I knew. I knew that
that God either didn't give a crap about me, or he wasn't there. It's the spirit of being nice, right? I knew it, because I made the deal, right? I told him I'd do all this stuff. You know, and at that vacation Bible school, they told me, those Christians, they told me that God loved us. What kind of loving God does that? And I was, remember that hole in my heart I told you about, right? That I tried to put things in to make me feel okay. That hole got ripped open. It had always been there, but it just got ripped open. And I was so mad, man, because, see, we didn't have much money, and my dad was laid off. And I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but when I was a kid is when, remember, you know, adjustable, movable basketball goals? All the guys will know about these, right? It's the thing that allows, you know, your dumb, small self to be able to dunk, right? So, you know, for Christmas, my dad got me one of those goals. It was like the first time they were ever out, you know, with the base that you filled with sand or water. You know what I'm talking about? And I got that thing for Christmas, man. And all we did, my dad and I, we talked so much trash. Because it's Christmas, right? He had just gotten a foot operation, you know, a little bit after Christmas. So we couldn't play. And, you know, he's talking, you know, like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to whoop you, old man. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to ball you up, you know, all this stuff. And then, you know, he's like, son, I brought you into this world. I'll take you out on the basketball court. You know, that kind of thing, man. And we weren't going to play. You know? We weren't going to play. And so I proceeded to live in whatever way I could to fill that hole. Put anything in there I could to kind of stop the bleeding, so to speak. And I'm one of those guys, man, I go all in, right? I'm all in, whatever. You know, I pick up a hobby, I'm like, you know, 100 miles down the road right after I pick it up, right? So, like, I start drinking on, like, a Tuesday. I remember the day my mom went over to a friend's house. It was right after my dad died. It was, like, just a day or two. And her son was like, hey, man, you want to get drunk? You want to go get some beer? And I'm like, sure. And I remember walking down the street, and we stole a bunch of 40 ounces, right? Luckily, remember I told you I was the gangster guy, so I had those baggy pants, and they're sagged, right? You could, like, stuff 40s in those bad boys, right? So I remember I stole 2 40 ounces in this little 7-Eleven or whatever, Quickie Mart. And he stole a couple, and somebody else stole some. We went back to his house. My mom was getting drunk with his mom, and we were getting hammered upstairs. And I remember feeling for the second time the most overwhelming peace like I felt by that Christmas tree. You know what I mean? Like, everything was good. And so that's what I did for the next several years. And I won't bore you with all the details, but I'm a seventh grade dropout. Never completed seventh grade. I had my first all points bulletin for my arrest when I was 13 years old. I went to, like, I think it was 5 or 6 schools that year, my seventh grade year, and then into later times. And I kept trying to fill the hole. Fill the hole. When we fast forward, you know, I almost died for like the 6th or 7th time or whatever, and I began praying to God again, just like I had prayed with my dad. You gotta understand what it would take, right? I already tried the God solution, but alcohol and drugs had beat me down to such a place that I was trying to make a deal again. God, if you're there, you owe me. God, if you're there, you owe me. I was in the emergency room. By the amount of drugs and alcohol I'd use, I had given myself drug-induced schizophrenia. That means when you're, you know, you're hearing voices when you're not high or drunk, right? I was almost 16 years old. I mean, I was a pretty young kid still. And at that point, there was a certain part of Cincinnati, you couldn't get a particular drug unless I had sold it. I'm also an entrepreneur, you know. I am on the emergency room table, right? And I told my, you know, I'd always said, I'm never going to be like my dad. Right? Never going to be like my dad. But here I was worse earlier. You see, I had never heard my dad call my mom the names I had called her or spoken to her the way that I had. And I won't share those words, but they're, you can imagine, right? I had hurt everyone I loved, right? I mean, I was a bad guy. I remember when my grandmother had breast cancer and was in agonizing pain after her surgery, I stole all her pain medication. I didn't mean to, but you can't stop, right? And that's how I lived. What I came to realize was I had a God-sized soul. It's as big as a needle, but an ocean of pleasure can't fill it. You know, there's a saying in the church, cor ad cor loquitur, in Latin. Heart speaks to heart. And so you might not be dope fiends and alcoholics and all that stuff. You might say, oh man, I'm not as bad as him or whatever, but listen to the heart of what I'm saying. You know, because you might be in a different position. Your addiction might be relationship or approval or food or spending money you don't have to fill the hole. We all have the hole, we all have the ache, right? And so I get sober and I start doing dangerous things. I start praying to God because I can't stop on my own. But I'm talking to God and I'm asking him to help keep me sober. And I go to a 12-step program and recovery and all that stuff. And I just keep praying. And then one day, my stepdad, whom I hated because he wasn't my dad, right? That's just the rule, right? He laughed at that. It's like the rule in that situation. Now I love him to death, right? But my stepdad, I was like 17 years old, and I was like, man, I want to go snowboard, and it wasn't snowing around Cincinnati. And he's like, well, where's the best snow in the world? And I'm like, Salt Lake City, Utah. He's like, why don't you move there? And I'm like, you just want me out of the house, right? He's like, no. He's like, just see, you know. And by that point, I started having an experience with God. I didn't know who he was. But I knew he's there, and I knew he's somewhat concerned. And so I pray. I said, God, if it's your will for me to go to Salt Lake City, you got to let me know. And the next morning, my mom's best friend at the time called her and said, hey, my stepson lives in Salt Lake City, and he's looking for a roommate. My mom didn't even ask her. Didn't even know she had a stepson that lived in Salt Lake City. My mom says, you're not going to believe this, but John wants to move out there. Well, you want him as a roommate. So at 17 years old, because I'm a high school dropout, I'd been busing tables, saving money. I took all the cash I had, and I jumped on a Greyhound bus, went 38 hours across the country. Dude, Greyhound buses are like a bad indie nightmare film. It was unreal. It was just the most surreal experience in my life. But I remember getting off that bus, and we were coming into Utah. It was like a stop, at like a, you know, rest stop or whatever. Get off, stretch your legs. And I looked up, and I saw real mountains for the first time. Like, real, I've been up the East Coast, but I'm talking, you know, Rocky Mountains. And so I went out to Salt Lake City, and I kept praying. I stayed sober. I worked one day, and then I'd snowboard the next. 65 days. I was like a legit snowboard bum for a winter. 17 years old, turning 18. I turned 18 in Salt Lake City. 65 days of snowboarding. But all I did, man, on one side of my tape, you know, remember Walkmans? Are you guys, you're like, no, what the hell is that? But we used to have tape cassettes to listen to music. Have you heard of these ancient toys, right? So, and on one side of my tape, I had Wu-Tang Clan. You heard of them, right? And on the other side, I had Rage Against the Machine. They were new then. Imagine that, right? And I would just snowboard all day by myself. And I would look around at these mountains, right? And I'd be sitting on the top of just grandeur and beauty. And I would say, there's got to be a truth. Like, snow is only made with, you know, it's H2O, right? Like, there are laws and nature and design and beauty and all these different things. And I'm sitting there. And by that point, I had started practicing Zen meditation. You know, I'm talking about a little Buddhism, right? Zen meditation is such a farce, man. It's like Americans mess up everything. Right? We grab on to other people's religions, you know, and like just mess it up, right? Like Zen Buddhism is like, you know, what, I don't know, just how you can hook up with girls and be spiritual. You know what I mean? Like that's what it was for me, right? That's like what we were trying to do. But I would sit down every morning and I'm like meditating because, you know, I thought Buddhism was for me, you know. Jesus has abs on the cross all the time, right? Like, Buddha, that looked like me. So I was like, that was my thing, right? Like, I identified with that God a little bit, right? But I'm sitting there, and I'm doing this meditation, right? And I'm praying, and I'm seeking God, and I'm trying to understand. And I said, God, if you have all these laws, and you have all this stuff, then there's got to be a way by which you want us to come to you. There's got to be a way by which you want man to come to you. Show me the truth. And so I moved back to Cincinnati, Ohio. I get my good enough diploma. You know what that is? A GED, right? Good enough diploma. I started going to college, right? I started going to a community college. And in the middle of this, I'm praying for God to show me the truth. Now, guys, I told you, my mom was a way far away Catholic. That's all I knew. But the other experience I had was Catholicism. Remember one of the five schools I got kicked out of? One of them was a Catholic school I went to for 3 or 4 days. Bear with me. My mom said, you're going to get some discipline. You're going to a Catholic school, right? And so I went on a Monday. And this was when Catholic schools were cheaper if you were actually Catholic. If you weren't Catholic, they charged you more. Could you believe that? It was good. It's incentive to become Catholic. You save $200, right? So my mom was like, hey, we're going to save $500. You're going to be Catholic. I said, I'm going to be what? Right? This is when I'm in the middle of drug, you know, stuff starting out. Things are bad already right after my dad died. I go to school. There's this priest there, Father Shockey. And Father Shockey takes an interest in me. He starts helping me. And he starts meeting with me right on Monday, right after school, like RCIA, my own private RCIA, teach me about the faith. So I went to school Monday. They were going to kick me out. Father Shockey said, no, I met with Father Shockey Monday afternoon. Tuesday, they were going to kick me out again. Imagine that, these people. They don't like me. They don't appreciate my humor, I guess, right? Tuesday afternoon, I meet with Father Shockey. Wednesday, we're there. Wednesday afternoon, they were going to kick me out. Father Shockey says no. Thursday, I come to school. Father Shockey went on vacation. They kicked me out Thursday afternoon. Game over, right? Started after my dad died. And I'm turning 13. This is all in a couple weeks after my dad died. It's right there, right? This time of year, actually. Today is the anniversary of my father's death. He shows up at my house. And I am drunk and stoned and whatever else. And he shows up at my house with ice cream and a cake. Says, John, I've been praying for you and your mom. I just want to tell you happy birthday, and I hope you guys are doing well. What can you do in that situation? You know? I hated goodness. I hated God at that point, so I just slammed the door in his face. So that was my experience with Catholicism. So here I am, Buddhism, right? Chubby, burning sage, hitting gongs, meditation. I told you, I'm all in, man. Hooking up with chicks, you know, spiritual, you know, like all that, right? That's what I mean. American stuff is like, we mess everything up, right? And I start praying this prayer. God, show me the truth. Show me the truth. And I went into meditation. I was like meditating. I was sitting silently. Try this for one time. Silently for 45 minutes. Just trying to get closer to God, a God I did not understand, but I knew was somewhat interested in me. I'm in meditation. I'm no mystic. And this wasn't like, you know, Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, like, you know, Mount Sinai, Exodus. This was like Morgan Freeman, you know, like whisper. So God showed me the truth. And I heard a voice, and I'm thinking, you know, I'll be a Christian. You want me to be a Christian? I'm thinking rock bands and lattes, you know what I mean? that kind of Christian. That's what I knew. Because I knew the Catholics didn't want me, but, you know, that sounded cool. I'd go to Tibet. I'll be a Buddhist monk tomorrow if that's the truth. If Islam's the truth, I will go on Hajj to Mecca. Like, I'm in. I just want to know the truth. I had had some experiences with God by that point. I knew there had to be a truth. And I sit down in meditation. God, show me the truth. I hear the voice. Go to Mass. What? God, I can't go to Mass. They don't want me, right? They don't want me. I go back into meditation. Okay, I know that wasn't you. What are you going to make me now? I'm good. Okay. Go back in. Praying. Go to Mass. I say, God, I can't just show up at some Catholic church, man. This is wild. Like, we don't even know each other that well. I'm certainly not going there. But if you put it in front of me, just like the Salt Lake City thing, if you put it in front of me, I'll do it. Thursday, right? It's a Thursday. I go to a 12-step meeting that night. A 12-step meeting, you don't talk about religion or politics or anything like that. We go through the meeting, whole deal. My buddy comes up to me afterwards, and he is, you guys seen Finding Nemo? Crush the Turtle comes up. My buddy John at the time was Crush the Turtle. Dude, what's up? He literally, he had tie-dye and corduroys and button socks on, long hair. Most amazing guy, he has a PhD now, he's incredible. But he comes up to me and he says, dude, I don't know what you're doing tonight, but I'm going to Mass at 10 p.m. if you want to go. And he's super cool, right? He's like, you know, super hippie guy. He's like, oh, bro, I didn't mean to offend you. It's cool. I was just asking if you want to go or not. I'm like, no, Crush, we're out here now. Like, what the heck? And I'm not telling him anything about what happened that morning, right? But I'm like, first of all, yeah, I'm going to Mass with you, but you go to Mass? I didn't see nobody like you in my 4 days I had there. Nobody like you. Two, what kind of Mass is at 10 p.m.? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was Sunday morning or weekday morning Mass. You know, at this school, we went every morning, right, for those days. It's crazy. And so I go with Crush the Turtle, and I go on my little pilgrimage, right? He's burning Nag Champa incense in his ashtray. It's the most surreal experience. He is bumping the Grateful Dead in this 1986 bombed out Bronco, okay? Like, it's a Bronco, and it is, on the outside, it looks like it's been through war, but on the inside, it's like leather seats and knives, and there's incense, and he has a 12-inch subwoofer in the back, and I've never heard the Grateful Dead with bass before. Like, it was crazy. And he's just tearing tail through the city. We're going to Mass. We're out here now, right? And I walk into Mass. And it's dim. It's on the campus of Xavier University. I was not attending Xavier at the time, but I walk in, it's dim. I look over to the left, there's a huge, beautiful, pure white statue of Our Lady with these candles. Same voice says, go to Mass, says, that's your mother. And I start crying like one of my kids that's getting to me. And Crush is like, dude, are you okay? And I'm not okay. I don't know what's happening, right? I have no idea what's going on. And so we go to Mass, and you guys, dude, if you see somebody new at Mass, you got to help, okay? Because we're like sit, stand, kneel, Catholic calisthenics. I think we did some burpees in the middle. I'm like, what are we doing here? And you don't remember, but I mean, this is a while ago. So like in 1998, there was a huge thing about whether you knelt before the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, right? Or after it was over. We kneel after now, right? Nobody knew then. Nobody had any idea. So some people were kneeling, some people were standing, so I was just kind of in the middle. Hedging my bets, right? Like, just kind of But we get to that point of the Mass, right? When finally everybody's kneeling, and I kneel down, I look, and this priest, he elevates the host. And I didn't know anything. I mean, yeah, Father Shockey met with me for those couple of days, but I didn't know anything. And the priest holds up the host. He says, "Behold the Lamb of God. Behold him who takes away the sins of the world. Happy are those called to this banquet." And I broke. I mean, guys, ugly crying. You know what I'm talking about? Like, snot is pouring out of my face. I can't breathe. I am cracked wide open. Because I knew three things in that moment. I knew I was a sinner, right? That's not popular, we don't talk about that, but I knew how broken my life had been to that point. I saw it all. Everything. And the reason I saw it all is because I was wrapped in absolute light and love. You see, as Catholics, that's one thing we don't understand. We're really good at telling people what they shouldn't do, right? We shit all over everybody, don't we? You know what I'm talking about? You ever shit on somebody? You ever shit on them, right? We do. We turn what Jesus gave us into a bunch of rules. And rules without relationship always lead to rebellion. Right? Always. But in the presence of love, I knew how wrong I had been. And that's something to keep in mind for you all. Some of you here, maybe you're not all in. Maybe you're not practicing your faith very well. You know, your roommate drugged you here, or, you know, bribed you. They're going to buy you something after. I don't know, but I want to let you know that it's not because I'm not telling you any secret, right? Like, you know already what you're doing wrong. You're not happy, but you keep doing it because it gives you pleasure for a minute, and that takes the place of happiness. But you got to keep doing it, and it never fills the hole. But for the rest of you, you know, those who are here, maybe you're really involved and you want it, you invited a friend tonight and all that stuff. Like, it's not about telling people what they should and shouldn't do. It's about loving people deeply. When you love people, it changes everything. And in the face of that love, I was ready to repent. I'm sobbing. The second thing I knew was that Jesus was everything that you all said he was. Everything Father Shockey said, everything that Vacation Bible School said, everything I heard, Jesus was who he said he was. And that rocked me. So I was loved. Jesus was Lord. And third, I don't know how I knew it, but I knew he was right there. And I had to find a way to get that. Does that make sense? I had to find a way to get that. Him. And so I'm wiping snot. I mean, I probably disturbed the Mass, you know what I mean? Like, we go through the rest, everybody receives communion, me, I'm just a pile of tears, and at the end we walk up, you know, the priest is there at the end, his name's Father Matthew Gamber, he's since passed away, he's probably a saint praying for me right now, but I walk up to Father Gamber, I didn't know him from Adam, and I said, "Hey, Father," you know, like, never, you know, "I don't know what happened to me tonight, but I'm pretty sure I'm supposed to be Catholic." And I think my buddy was behind me, like, jumping up and down, like, I got one. Tagging, you know, like, right? And he goes, craziest thing, man. I mean, I've been selling dope, all this stuff. I'm not that far sober. I'm sober a couple years or whatever. And he hands me a catechism, the little catechism, the little white one, you know what I'm talking about? Maybe you got one on your desk or in bookshelf or whatever. And he hands me one. That book's thick, bro, right? He's like, "Here, read this." And I'm like, I did something with this. And read the four Gospels. The four what? I mean, I didn't even know what the Gospels were. My buddy's like, oh, I'll get him a Bible. You know, I'll show him, no big deal. And he said, keep coming, we have Mass here every night at 10 p.m. Keep coming back. I did. And I became Catholic. It was incredible. Easter, 1999. I was baptized, given confirmation, and I received Him, right? Him. And it changed everything. Changed the way I viewed women. It changed the way I viewed relationships. It changed and destroyed everything about my life, right? Like, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, I always wanted to be an attorney. And I always prayed one day, you know, I want a Mercedes S-Class, right? God's funny. I have a Mercedes. I own a Mercedes now, even though I work in the church. And it begins with an S. It's a Sprinter, and it seats 12 people. So you got to be really specific in your prayers. You got to nail this thing down. But it absolutely destroyed my life in the best way possible. In the best way possible. And I took that good enough diploma. I was able to go to Xavier University. And I took Greek. Oh, and a little funny story, you know, what this guy who was studying to be a priest, the Jesuit, his class, his name's Father David McConey now. Dave McConey was a scholastic, we called him Mr. McConey at the time, and he was teaching a Greek class, and I wanted to take his class because he was one of the guys that was at that Mass when I converted, and I got to know him real well. It's like a spiritual director to me, like a father, you know, and I wanted to take his Greek class, and they're like, oh, that's an honors class, you got to get permission. And I'm like, cool. I'm like, where do I go? They're like, that building, this department, cool. All right, I'll walk over my little slip, and I sit down with the chair of the department. He's like, why do you want to take Greek? He's like, stoked, right? Nobody wants to take Greek, apparently. So students need money. He's like, come on in, boss, you know? And I said, well, you know, my great-grandfather is Greek. Maybe one day I go to Greece, and I can speak with my family or, you know, people. And he's looking at me horrified. This is ancient Greek. You don't speak it. I'm like, yeah, I knew that. Can I take it? I mean, you know, like, and I took it. And then they're like, hey, you want to take Latin too? We got a whole honors program. If you take these dead languages, we'll give you money to go to school. Bet. Money? I'm in. So by that point I thought I wanted to be a veterinarian, and then I took chemistry. He realized that I could never be a veteran. Because I couldn't pass chemistry. So I started to serve in the priesthood, and I did the things that we do as young men who love the Lord, right? Started discerning the priesthood. Those habits that you have before you meet Jesus, they don't just instantly go away. They become a little easier, but man, they're holding on to you. They got a grip, right? And I was trying to understand and discern how virtue worked, how grace built on nature. And I was pretty stoked, man. I thought I was going to be a priest, and it was all lined up, and I was going to call the vocation director on a Monday. Sunday night, I went to the 10 p.m. Mass at Xavier at that point. I'm in the school. There's this really nice, I'm waiting for my buddy Crush the Turtle to meet me there. And there's a nice little redheaded lady, and she's greeting people at the door. She's super involved. And, you know, me, I'm a convert, so, like, you know, none of you guys are as Catholic as me, right? So I just start talking to her, not to flirt. You know, flirt to convert or anything, just a little, like, you know, talking past the time, but, you know, I'll help you cradle Catholics, right? Like, that's what I'm going to do. And turns out she had been going to, like, Eucharistic adoration since she was in, like, third grade, so she was, like, more Catholic than me, and I was like, oh, this is crazy. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to be a priest. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm serving religious life, but I don't know, and blah, 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 you know, all these, Aren't these normal dating conversations? And so, you know, I said, well, she said, what high school did you go to? That's a popular question in Cincinnati. And I said, well, I didn't. I dropped out of school in seventh grade. You ought to hear the story, you know? Like, you guys just had to endure. And she goes, oh, yeah, real nice. You know, she's a super nice lady. She, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Leave me alone, weirdo. You know? Like, and so I was like, cool, I'll stalk her, right? So, and so, you know, that was before you had, like, you know, stalk book or Facebook or whatever. Before you had that, right? And none of that was happening. So, like, I knew her roommate. So I got her roommate's number, and I called at, like, 9 a.m. Hey, is Lisa there? You know, and no, Lisa's not here. She's at work. And I said, well, it's been a couple hours. She said, oh, John, you know, her name's Amanda, her roommate. Oh, John, I'll write it up on our board by the phone, like, no big deal. So I called back at noon, and dang it, Amanda answered again. And I, well, is Lisa home? I didn't know if she saw the message. No, she's, you know, she's in class now. And I wrote it on the board. It's up there. You don't have to call back. Yeah, okay. And I called back at 3 and later, and it looked bad. But she called me back. Started hanging out. One thing led to another. She kissed me. But we would meet, man. We'd go to mass together, or we'd go to adoration, right? And then we go get coffee after, or go out to dinner, or do stuff like that. And like, grew up in this community of people that were going to mass and praying together and all this. And I didn't know, man. I told you guys about my relationships and what I thought I knew about relationships, right? But I found a different way. And I actually respected her. And we had these profound conversations, and we grew in friendship and intimacy and all this stuff. And it was incredible. We didn't have sex. We didn't do those things. And then 10 months later, I'm like, hey, think you want to hang out for forever? And she was like, yeah. The 9 kids weren't in the plan yet, you know? And we said yes, right? We said yes to a life of, there's this line in the book of Revelation that they followed the Lamb wherever he would go, right? And I'm here to tell you, I'm from the future, right? I'm from your future, right? Jesus is everything he said he was. It's all real. Like, I've studied all the dead languages. I teach scripture now. I teach all these things. And the more I dig, the more true and real it is. I've been studying and teaching the Bible for 20 years. Teaching theology as a missionary, discipleship, evangelization, all this stuff. And it's all true. And more I see the puzzle pieces fit together. And it's for us. And if you have that God-sized hole, even if you're already in it, you know, even if you're a regular at Mass, you're all these things, we can always repent more. We can always let him into our lives a bit more. And so I encourage you, right? I encourage you. Dig in. I won't tell you what you should do, right? I won't tell you what you should do. But what you can. My friend used to have this saying, and I'll close with this. God will never be outdone in generosity, right? God will never be outdone in generosity. So the more you give of yourself, that's the paradox of faith. The more you give of yourself, the more you lay down your life, the more you love others, the more you get. I'm not special. I'm special just like all of you. And that's what's incredible to me now. Like, what would make me leave my home with the particularly attractive redheaded wife and the beautiful kids and all that to come to Fargo, North Dakota in the middle of January? I assure you, it is not money. Great enough. But I want to love what he loves. He loves you guys. And if my story can encourage you in that at all, bet. I'll do that every time. Every time. So give it a shot. You'll see incredible things. Thanks.
Pursuit of truth. So let's give a big round of applause for that.